And so you need the time, energy, to be able to deal with the things that you couldn't mitigate for, instead of trying to catch up for the things you didn't mitigate for.
Calgary Show Services presents the Event Planning Podcast, featuring interviews with industry professionals to help you produce your next event.
So here we are at Cafe Bino. What a great place. Have you tried the butter tart?
I love the butter tarts. They're iconic here.
So we're with Hanan Shabib, and she's from Beakerhead. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thanks for inviting me. Yep.
So your life is Beakerhead.
Yes, it sure is. Yeah. So I'm one of the directors at Beakerhead. So I go every day into work, and that's what I do. Think about Beakerhead.
And what is Beakerhead?
Oh, that's a good soundbite. So Beakerhead is a smash-up of science, engineering, and art, and it's done in an entertaining and artful way as a spectacle on the streets of Calgary. So we try to bring things that have a science and engineering focus right to the streets, to the public, so people can engage in it. So we do roughly about 50 to 60 events, and it can range from a robot uprising to a catapult competition to science busking down on Stephen Avenue Walk to big, huge mechanical fire-breathing octopuses in the middle of, like, Inglewood. So it's really a five-day spectacle here in Calgary that celebrates science, art, and engineering.
So what are some of the surprises that you found in working with Beakerhead?
What
was your impression before you got the job? And then what was something that you immediately learned after getting the job?
The thing about when I started with Beakerhead, it was we hadn't even had the event yet. So there was a lot of people who had been talking or conversing with Beakerhead around what it's going to be or what it's going to look like. And when I stepped in, it was still really broad, big thinking concepts that didn't quite have a logistics or a production person behind it. And we learned in a really short time that you could pull together a five-day event and roll it out in a really big scale. Just because there's a huge desire or huge passion to do so. So what I learned is that a small team can make something rather large look like it's been around a really long time.
So how did you focus the conception enough so that you could pull it off?
I don't know if we focused it or more so like looked at the big chunks that we had to accomplish and then brought in as many experts as we possibly could, so people who knew better than we did on how to make things happen. So we brought in partnerships like sound companies that just like knew how to pull together a festival in a really short time, or worked with people who have worked on things like the Grey Cup to pull together an opening ceremony in a 2-month span of time as well. So it was really relying on like the experts here in Calgary that have been doing some wonderful work themselves and bringing them into the fold rather quickly and feeling like we could trust their abilities to deliver really quickly.
I've noticed that musicians are really well represented in the city, mm-hmm. and there are many events where you can go and see musicians and dance is starting to become more involved,
yeah.
and whatnot, maybe I'm separate. I've separated myself too much from the scene, but art, it didn't seem to have a platform until Beakerhead came along, that where it was a spectacle for the public, like wasn't as private an event, like something that could really showcase artists. So how important do you think it is to our communities to represent our artists?
I think any great city puts their artists and their creative folks at the forefront of the representation of that city. And it's the public installations that get me excited, and it gets the rest of the team excited. So if we're excited about it, we hope that the rest of the general public would be excited about it. And we find that making art kind of mainstream is a really great gateway into sort of like going into a gallery that maybe you didn't feel comfortable going into before, but all of a sudden, if you make it so accessible that people are stumbling into art and it's very unexpected and it's weirdly delightful, and it becomes so, like, the barriers are sort of like torn down that people feel like, oh, well, this is in collaboration with this gallery, or this is in collaboration with this artist. I'm going to go and check them out next time because I really enjoyed them during Beakerhead. I hear they've got a show 3 months down the road. I'm going to go check that out.
So it's not only promoting the artists themselves, but the collaboration that that artist might have with a local venue.
Well, and not only that, it's like sort of the community that artists actually, artists create really great cities. And we can't have a really great city without really great artists. And so if we're not putting them in the forefront of the festival and having everything have an artful feel or an artful touch or an entertaining touch, then people won't find science and engineering all that accessible either. So it's all about making all of those spaces accessible to people who feel like maybe they need permission to go and experience art, or maybe they need permission to go experience engineering. Like, I know for myself that I love science, and so I don't feel that I have to have someone tell me, go and get involved in this, you know, participate in Telespark because it's really sciencey. But there are some people who are like, well, maybe I wasn't good at science, but I really want to check this out. And so they put that barrier up, and we're trying to remove those barriers for them. And I think art is a really great way to introduce engineering and science to the public, and also for engineers and scientists who aren't comfortable in the art sphere because they don't consider themselves to be artists or creative. Sometimes breaking down the barrier into art by using science and engineering helps them have permission as well.
So it's kind of like when you have a sick dog and you're trying to get them to take a pill.
Yeah.
You push it into a piece of meat and then
exactly.
They swallow the whole
or
thing.
Peanut butter, right? Like it's and that's what I mean by making things mainstream, is that like we've got wonderful artists here in Calgary and they're internationally known, but we don't always see them because they're out in the world making great things happen. But if we bring them back down to the street level and have people stumble into them, then they get the recognition that they deserve, and the city gets the recognition that it deserves as well.
I think it's very important as well because in like the hierarchy of needs, we've already kind of met our basic needs in Calgary. A lot of people had, not all people, but what really is the icing on the cake is the art, like the
Definitely.
Music, the art. That's where the richness of our lives is derived from, I think.
Yeah, like
and
when people
so
talk about great cities,
can foster it.
Definitely. So when people talk about great cities, they don't talk about like they don't talk always about like the infrastructure of the city, but they talk about like, oh, we went to this great plaza and there's this really wonderful art piece there. I don't even know the name of it, but we really enjoyed it and we spent the day at this park. And so like when people talk about Barcelona, or when they talk about Montreal, or when they talk about London, they really talk about like the arts and culture spheres. And so Beakerhead just is that kind of platform where 5 days you just sort of get this condensed collaboration from all of these people here in Calgary that are already doing amazing things, but if they're doing them all at the same time, it really catches the attention of the rest of the city and the rest of the world. And so Beakerhead's intention is to shine a new light on Calgary in that way.
So I think we've established the importance of the festival.
Yeah.
But what happens behind the scenes? Like, how are you dealing with international artists? If you're bringing them over, are they building their pieces here, or are they shipping something over to contribute to the festival?
Sometimes it's a little of both. And we started off where we felt like bringing in international artists would help sort of create a sense of place here in Calgary. And in our third and fourth year, we've shifted it so that there are things being actually produced by Calgarians that are of such caliber that now we're importing them outwards to the rest of the world. So they're creating here in Calgary, but it now becomes something that people are coming to Calgary and looking at Calgarians and going, can we bring that over to our events, spectacle, festival in other parts of the world? And so it's just like whenever you're a promoter for a big, huge music fest, you can talk to really big names and bring them in, and they have all of that set up. Like, the mechanism to bring them in is really easy. You talk to the agent, you've got the technical writer, you work through the technical writer, the hospitality, the whole bit. And for us, that's much more simpler than taking a local artist who maybe hasn't had a chance to get to that point and helping elevate them up to a bigger public installation level so that they can go outwards, and then helping them learn what is that process, what do they need to know so that when they're taking their pieces outwards, how can they do that successfully?
What was it like when you initially started to plan some events like a fire shooting robot? How did the city respond to having an installation like that? And what kind of hoops did you have to jump through to make it happen?
Sometimes ignorance is bliss, right? Like, not knowing that something is near impossible to do. Because if you have the sense that something is completely impossible, sometimes you don't try it out. But we've got this kind of attitude that nothing is impossible, so we go for it. When we approached the city at first, I don't know if they were really sure that we were serious, but they've been amazing. And we're one of the very few cities in the world where our city doesn't just say no. So what we do is we sit down with them and we say, these are the kinds of the crazy things that we're thinking about. And they go, ah, that's fun, but this is the checklist that we think that you need to accomplish to make that a success and to make that safe. And then we work really hard to make sure that we get through that checklist and remove all of the barriers we possibly can. And we work really closely with them. Like, I've got the fire department on speed dial on my cell phone. And there's a good reason. It's because we are in constant conversation with them about how to make things safe. And so they never say no. They always say, that's an interesting idea. Here's the things that you need to accomplish. And then sometimes the list may feel daunting for other folks, but as a team, we look at that list and go, well, that's not a no, so that means that's possible. So we're just going to move through that list and make it happen.
Well, speaking of the team, it seems like there's a really broad volunteer base.
We sure do, yeah.
I know there's a volunteer coordinator.
Yeah.
Are you having regular volunteer meetings throughout the year? What is the scope of that, and how are you managing? How's Beakerhead managing those people?
Well, when we first started out, we didn't have a huge volunteer list. We would just have people sort of step in during the 5 days and help us out. And we found that Beakerhead was growing really fast, and our capacity as a team, we couldn't scale the same level as scaling the actual program. So the volunteer manager thought of, like, well, let's build out crews, volunteer crews that could help us accomplish what we're accomplishing. And she did this remarkable thing of creating this wonderful program. And surprisingly enough, people were really interested in getting involved, and on a big level, not on a, like, hey, I just want to show up for 8 hours. And so she starts to recruit volunteer crew members, like, in December. And we're currently sitting with the crews right now and conversing with them about what the program elements need to look like and how to accomplish the goals and the objectives of those programs. So, and we've got like 3 new crews this year that we didn't have last year. So every time we learn something new in the year, and then we just build another volunteer crew to sort of help us solve for that problem. And it's been really successful. We've got crew members who like put in easily the same number of hours as we do during and right before Beakerhead, and they love it. They're exhausted, but they love it. And so there must be something about it that they're enjoying.
What do you think it is that they're getting out of it?
I think the opportunity to do something a little bit strange and unusual and unexpected and creative, and maybe it's not something that they get to do in their everyday sort of work and personal life. So, you know, like we had volunteers who literally hung out with a fire-breathing mechanical octopus every single day, you know, and it was their role to make sure that those guys that came in from out of town with this thing were successful here in Calgary. And you can tell your grandkids about it, like, you know, 20 years down the road that you did something like this, right? Or you got to talk to an astronaut, or you got to, like, you know, hang out with GZA from the Wu-Tang Clan. Like, nobody gets to do that in their day-to-day, like, lives. And right. So Beakerhead sort of gives you an opportunity to do some really weird stuff with your day.
Well, and they're also developing a skill set that could be applied to numerous other things.
Oh,
like
yeah.
Learning about, you know, safety, pyrotechnics, coordination, event planning, you know.
Oh, yeah. Like, the amount of logistics and production that actually goes into an event. Like, so you might be a project manager, but you've never done an event before. And I think if you're doing events really, really well, they look really easy from the outside. But they're usually, back-end-wise, they're usually heavy in workload. Like, heavy, heavy in workload. And then you get this large audience who really appreciates the fact that you've put in that work. And so the rewards are really huge as well for the volunteers, is because they can see that their output has accomplished something, which is really lovely for them.
What is the Science Festival Alliance, and what role does it play in Beakerhead?
Which one?
Science Festival Alliance, I meant.
So there's numerous science festivals like all over the world, and so they've got an association under that name. And so Marianne Moser, who's our president, is a member, and they get together and they sort of talk about like how they accomplish, getting science to the general public. And Marianne comes at it from a different point of view, because she's an avid science communicator that believes in like entertaining and delighting people, and that science and engineering is like the greatest story to be told of all time, but we bore people usually with it. And so her role with getting involved with them is to learn from them, obviously, because they're far more, a lot of those festivals are far more established than we are. We're still like, you know, toddlers in the scope of a lifetime for a festival. And she sort of talks about it in a different way too, like, well, we don't have like the venue where you've got the tables and you've got the trifolds to talk to people about science. We try to get to people where they don't even know that they're enjoying science and engineering when they're out on the street having a cocktail. So that's kind of how we got involved with them.
And so are the artists kind of being shared between these science festivals across country?
Yeah,
and
so we try to do that actually with a lot of arts festivals as well. So talking to like Nuit Blanche in other parts of Canada, as well as Illuminato, just to see what it is that they're also bringing in and how can we cost share some of the bigger stuff. And then who do we have that we can also share as well? So there's, UC does this, it's called U Calgary Strong Festival, that's done on Bermuda Shorts Day. And we've been talking with the organizer and providing them with the names of artists that we worked with last year who made a real nice impact. And they're bringing them in for their festival as well. So we get to do the same, is sort of share all our sort of successful artists and installations with them.
So what kind of costs are associated with putting on the event, and how do you come up with the funding?
Oh, wow. Okay, so our annual budget is roughly between $1.4 and $1.8 million every year, right? So that sounds like a lot of money, right? But when you think about the amount of actual productions that we're putting into the streets, it's actually much, much lower than you would expect. We also have a nice chunk of funding around marketing and branding. And so I think the reason why Beakerhead is so successful is because there's a big, huge presence online, on TV, in print, all over the world around what we're doing. And some of that budget goes towards that. So we have corporate sponsors. We've got great provincial funding. We had some federal funding as well. We do things like grants. People donate to us. So we're a not-for-profit.
What kind of corporate sponsors are involved, and what was the appeal for them to be involved in Beakerhead?
Well, initially, a lot of the sponsors that came in that were corporate were all oil and gas or engineering focused. And their appeal is that they can get their employees engaged in an engineering sort of platform that was a little bit more outside of the scope of what they normally do, right? We also have funders that recognize that Beakerhead is a great way to elevate a different kind of industry, sort of tourist industry or an arts and culture industry here in our city, and that helps diversify the kind of economy that we have here in Calgary and Alberta, right? Which is wonderful, right? So we have funders who recognize the importance of that, and they recognize that Beakerhead is a platform for that.
Outside of those 5 days, I've noticed there's some other projects going on, like individually with school system and whatnot. What kind of other events are happening outside of the festival dates?
We do a lot of things like workshops. So we do things like people who are interested in designing and building their own lamp with the environmental design students up at the U of C. They can come in and work with a bit of software that they don't normally have access to, design a lamp, construct the lamp, cut it out, install it, and have something that they can show off at home. So things like that. We also have events where we go to like the teachers' convention every February and work with teachers on how to change their school environments or their classrooms just even a little bit for themselves. So this year we taught them fort making. So it was like a room full of teachers who basically got together and built forts out of the tables, the chairs, any materials that they could find. And you had 10 to 12 adults huddled into forts underneath in the, you know, just giggling like kids and really enjoying themselves and seeing, understanding what this sort of hands-on approach of learning and why it's important for schools.
It's interesting, too, because that memory is going to be so poignant for them,
right?
Like especially in their adult life, to have an experience like that where they had to give up a level of their own comfort. And I think that something like that inherently kind of destroys your ego a little bit, and you have to live more. You're more exposed to other people, and so when you're put into that situation, the memory that you associate with something like that is so much more sticky.
Totally.
So what is the system like? How do people attend the event once they've found out, like, you know, there's this crazy robot and whatnot?
So most of our events are free. Like 85% of what we do is free for the public, and you stumble into it. But we have a program that lands. Our website is updated regularly on what's available for the 5 days or what's happening throughout the year. And if it's a ticketed or a workshop or a talk, then we have registration. That stuff goes pretty fast, registration and ticketed items.
So what are some of the technologies that you're using to manage the ticketing, registration process, calendar of events, volunteer coordination, all of that kind of
stuff? So nothing super sophisticated. So Eventbrite for all of our sort of ticketed and registration events. We also use TicketLeap as well, which is a really good format for events. For our volunteer coordination, it's Volgistics. So literally, it's a scheduling system. Claudia, who's our Director of Community Engagement, manages that. And she has roughly about 1,000 volunteers that she needs to talk to on a regular basis. So that product helps her do that really well. Of course, our website. We've got really great partners who help us create a website that's functioning and useful for people who are looking to see what's happening. But we also find that people really crave something that's tangible and like something that they can have in their hands. So our printed program, we usually do about 30,000 printed programs, and they're gone within like the first 7 days that they drop. And that's because people just like want to be able to like carve out like what are they going to be doing their Thursday night? What are they going to be doing all Saturday? How are they going to handle Sunday during Beakerhead?
Yeah. It's interesting the difference between having a physical piece of paper than looking at something on your phone or a tablet. I'm looking forward to the day when we have material that behaves more like paper, where we can mark it all up with our hand and things like that, where it's more, it just feels more present.
Yeah, I think by being able to put your own personal mark on something, then you kind of like, you're almost creating ownership over like what events that you're choosing to take on. So that's probably where the disconnect is for a lot of people.
Yeah, I could see that for sure.
Yeah, that's actually a good comment. So maybe we need to start thinking about how do we make it so that people can customize their own program without having to use a pen and paper to do that. Yeah, anyone out there who's a developer who wants to like create something that is very useful and might disrupt this industry, get on that.
It seems like there would be a fair amount of liability involved in some of the things. So, is there like a blanket insurance that covers the entire thing, or are you having to get separate insurance based on each individual event?
Our insurance is quite the beast to take on. So we have our own sort of general liability, but it's much higher than most organizations. We have about a $5 million general liability. But then on top of that, for anything that has... So we put through everything through a risk assessment process. And if that risk assessment shows us that we have some concerns over personal safety, of course we mitigate for all of that well in advance, but then we do is we talk to our insurance company and we tell them everything that we're doing down to like the last detail, and we'll actually take out special event insurance for those particular events. And so anything that we produce in-house for Beakerhead, we make sure that there's insurance on top of that. Then we also ask our sort of collaborators and program presenters who are bringing in their own program elements into Beakerhead to also provide us to show that they have insurance on top of that. We do things like waivers. There's lots of signage as well. Like this is a good clue for people who might not be able to have the kind of like budget where they can put a lot more dollars into insurance, is to make sure you have really clear signage around what your expectation is. So instead of asking people to please don't drink and drive, you actually have signage that says don't drink and drive, and here's how you can accomplish that. You know, or
that's interesting. I was part of an event and they had about a 4-foot stage, and they said anybody that is going to go on this stage has to sign this waiver for the risk of being on this stage. It was completely fenced all the way around except for the front, which was marked with
clear
very bright
orange
tape and whatnot.
Yeah.
And somebody actually did somehow managed to fall off of it. And when I saw this waiver initially, I thought, this is kind of a redundancy that I don't think is necessary.
Yeah.
And I quickly learned
that
it was a crazy event, but things happen.
And it's always really important to think about the things that, it's not a sort of a fatalist attitude, but it's more thinking about all the things that could possibly go wrong and then mitigate for it so that you don't have to think about those things when the event is happening. There's always something that will go wrong. And so you need the time, energy to be able to deal with the things that you couldn't mitigate for instead of trying to catch up for the things you didn't mitigate for. So we find that we have a lot of waivers. We have like signage that indicates like if you are going to climb this, please note that you are now taking your own liability in hand. We have like it's just like not common sense, but you just want to make sure people understand what they're taking on and that you're doing all you possibly can to make them safe, and it's also their personal responsibility to make good decisions while they're at your event too.
I wonder what the bottom of that insurance policy must look like, because I know at the bottom of some of mine, act of God, force majeure, whatnot.
Yes. And, well, we also have things like our clauses are like you can't operate without actual true permits. So like if the law requires you to have like an open flame permit, you're not allowed to be on site without that open flame permit, and we need to see it well in advance. We have like inspections are required for certain apparatus. It's all this super boring stuff that people like never want to dig into, but that's actually what keeps people safe. And that's what allows us to do what we do, and that the city has confidence that we are taking this stuff seriously. So when we bring them these weird things, that they're not going right away, no, because we don't have faith that you're not going to be able to think about these things.
And the patrons are able to experience what's happening without having to worry too much about it because you've already done all the work in advance.
Well, and we hope we have done all the work in advance. Yeah, that's the stuff that keeps me up at night, believe it or not. It's all the risk management and the, you know, our emergency response plans and like, do we have all of the like the right egress points in place? Like, again, it's all the stuff that people don't really want to think about because it's not the fun parts of our jobs. But for me, it's like the only thing that keeps people having fun. And so far for 4 years, we've had maybe 3 incidences, and they all were things like this person needed a Band-Aid. You know, that person needed just to like sit down for a moment. So
what are some of your most fond memories from the festival itself?
Oh, there's just so many of them. So one of my fondest moments was the first year and being down in East Village, and it was Beaker Night. We had Compressor Head, which is an actual robot band with robots who play actual heavy metal music. And we had Architect, who are these guys who play like their instruments, but they've got giant Tesla coils shooting lightning across at each other. And it was the first year we did Beaker Night, and we didn't know whether or not people were going to come. And people started showing up like an hour before our event was even starting, and there was like large groups of senior citizens, you know, hanging out, and then families with like young toddlers on their shoulders at like 11 o'clock at night watching the bands. And it was the first time that I think we realized that if you build something that you think is pretty delightful, that like you'll get the response that you're hoping for. And we just watched people sort of move from one stage to the other the whole night. And I think just seeing people's faces just like mesmerized by, you know, them playing the Ramones, or like, it was such a beautiful, beautiful night for me.
And people are hungry for an experience like that.
Yeah.
You can get into routines that create a monotony to life. And if somebody presents you with an experience, or if there's something available to break that and you're able to, it's just going back to the rich part of life. Like,
that's
every,
right.
Every memory like that is invaluable to life. Like,
and for me, it's also about like having no barriers for those people to come and have those rich experiences. You know, like for seniors, they can't dish out, you know, a $90 ticket to have a rich experience, and families with young children also can't do the same. Or new immigrants, where they're just sort of learning the language. You know, can we have these wonderful experiences that they can enjoy? And they don't have to know so much behind the scenes as to why it's happening. They're just like, I don't know why this is happening. There's a giant rocket ship in the middle of Victoria Park right now. And I'm just going to climb up this ladder and get into this rocket and explore. And I don't know why it's here, but it's amazing. And thank goodness it's here. Yeah. You know, those are the kinds of things that really make me happy.
What about a painful moment?
Oh, painful moment. So, in our second year, when we were learning all about like open flame permits and how to bring in fire breathing things into the city safely, we were learning alongside with our fire departments on how do we go about making the processes and the procedures to make this happen. And of course, the insurance company wants to see that the fire department has signed off on something. The fire department wants to see that the insurance company has signed off on something. And the day before El Popo Mecanico is supposed to be breathing fire in Calgary, I'm, you know, working out those processes with the two organizations. And I think it was probably the hardest thing that I'd ever done in my entire life. But when I got the open flame permit in my hand, I still have it, and I will frame it, and it will go on my wall right next to my degree, because it was really that much hard work that had to go into actually making that happen. And people loved it, so that was like, you know, all the hard work was sort of worth it. But that was the biggest pain for me.
And now that you've overcome that obstacle, just think of what you can do now.
Like, sure.
I'm trying to figure out how to empower my daughters, because my oldest daughter, she'll get frustrated when she can't immediately do things sometimes. And And so, like, I'm trying to think of a way to give her, like, incremental challenges to build that confidence. And, like, for you, I think that this moment, not that you're I'm relating you to a child.
Totally.
Not
that's
that you're
okay.
a child, but
totally get it.
But for you, just think how far you can take it now.
Yeah, well, we kind of learn at Beakerhead that persistence is a key element of what we do, and we are in the market of getting rid of barriers. And sometimes people don't want to, they don't want to face the barrier, they don't want to understand the barrier, but the beautiful thing about understanding that you have a barrier is that you can see it, and so usually there's a solution around it or over it. A lot of times we stop at that barrier because we see it as a sign that we're not supposed to continue, but usually it's because whoever's placing the barrier in front of you needs more information, or they need a greater understanding of what you're trying to achieve, or they need to make sure that you're going through the right process. And I don't know what it is, but I don't have that inkling to always go the easy route. And I guess because if it was easy, everyone would have already have done it. So we've got a team at Beakerhead where we're kind of all kind of geared that way a little bit. And I think that's, you know, only really great things can happen if you, like your daughters, if they continue on or persist and recognize that, yeah, sometimes things don't happen, but at least you can say, well, I did everything I possibly could, and now I know I can't make it happen. As opposed to, well, I didn't try everything, and I don't know if it would have worked or not. Or having that sort of self-doubt of, I don't know if it's going to work or not.
That's something, both sides are something that you carry with you, I think, from that point on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whether it's the failure or your confidence
yeah.
from that moment.
And you realize that failure's not not such a big deal either. Like, when you've done it enough, like, when you've failed enough, and you realize, like, the world still goes on, and people don't hold you to your failures in the same way that you do, then it's easier to actually just get up and keep trying something different.
If you could suggest maybe one tip or make a suggestion for somebody who's just starting to plan an event.
Mm-hmm. My suggestion is to not try to learn what everybody else has done. My suggestion is to try something different and see if it works. Cause sometimes that kind of puts you on the map. There's wonderful event producers and event coordinators all over Calgary. And the ones that do really, really well are the ones who kind of take it from a different angle or try not to do it in a traditional or conventional sense. So try something you haven't tried before. Like, that's probably the best tip I can give.
And if you're stranded on a desert island and you could only have one meal for the rest of your life over and over again, what would it be?
Cheerios right now. Don't ask me why, but there's something about Cheerios that I eat every single day. So.
Lastly, how can people find out about Beakerhead and yourself?
Okay, so really easy, beakerhead.com. That's our website, so great way to do that. If you follow us on Twitter, of course, and Instagram, that's another way to get some insight into what we do. You can always find me by plugging my name into the Google search, and I come up there quite easily. So.
Great, but thank you so much for taking the time.
Well, thanks for the opportunity to do this. It's always neat to talk to somebody about what we do at Beakerhead that isn't in it every single day, because it always gives us some insight into what we're doing as well.
Hopefully yeah. It's inspired a bit of the rest of your day.
Yeah, thank
and,
you.
And we look forward to the festival.
Yes.
Thanks.
And by the way, we don't call it a festival.
Oh, sorry.
So I know that my boss is going to ask me why I didn't correct. So you'll see that we don't use the terminology festival, only because festivals imply that there's a venue, an entrance, an exit, a ticketing system, and we really kind of just are everywhere, and so we're more of a spectacle.
Ah, fantastic.
Yeah. Thanks for letting me correct you.
Thank you. Take care.
Okay, take care.
Thank you for listening. This podcast was produced by Duncan Kenworthy, Eric Jesse, and Chris Benoit. Visit us online at CalgaryShowServices.com to join our monthly newsletter for inventory updates and event insights.